Hello, and welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. It's Friday, and I thought I'd record the first part of an episode today because I had some things to talk about. I went to the comic shop today and I bought some stuff because of traffic. So I was coming up of Powers, which is a northbound street that is very, very busy, and it was Friday, and it was sort of early. It's around 4 o'clock, and the traffic was just so bad that I decided to pull into, well, actually, I was forced to pull into the parking lot because I couldn't get into the other lanes. And I pulled into the parking lot, and I said, I had no intention of buying more comics today, but it's my birthday weekend, so fuck it. And I went in there and I picked up a couple of three issues of FF I knew I was missing, 186, 184, and 190. And I was bagging and boarding. So when Reed gives me his bags and boards, he does them back to back, and I was bagging and boarding, and I don't expect him to go through all the work of doing that. I actually kind of like doing it. I get to inspect the books. I get to see what's going on. And as I was going through those Fantastic Four issues of Reed's, I was just blown away by how many issues Medusa was a member of the Fantastic Four. That's an era of Fantastic Four I just wasn't too aware of, and I love the Inhumans, and it was awesome when Medusa was with Johnny, but now it even makes more sense that oh God, I love that scene where Black Bolt just puts his index finger to his lips, and he can't do anything, but he blows out the candle, and he's essentially telling Johnny, if you fuck over Medusa, who's the love of my life, because they were dating, around the time Avengers and Inhumans were fighting, I will blow you out. I'll use my voice to blow out your life. God, I just love that scene. But going through those issues, I was like, God, I just want to dig into the. First, I'm trying to track down why Sue is so pissed and taking Franklin on a road trip and then running away from Reed, because I've been reading those issues, and it's just interesting, the whole thing, and then Ben turns human, and then Power Man comes, and I was just rifling through these covers, and I was like, oh my God, there's just so much wealth of information. But I picked up three issues I knew I was missing, and I also picked up Avengers, the later issues that I knew I was missing, when the cover started to look really funky, right before Heroes Reborn and disassembled. And I knew I was missing these, so I just picked up a handful of them. I had no intent of buying anything, but I was like, hey, he's got a 30% off cover price sale, and I had to kill some time before getting back on the road. The traffic was horrible, and I bought a bunch of Megaton Mans, which I really wanted to buy from Kitchen Sink. So it's pretty much 1 through 10 minus the one issue I had, and then I bought a Wizard Ace edition of Megaton. Really cool glossy cover. It looks like acetate. But, also, I was surprised to see on the top shelf he had from Boom Studios. I guess he knows it's kind of adult oriented. But he had Faithless down up there. And he had the bag and boarded covered editions, the special editions. And this one is by Vanessa DeRay, and I it was the only one that I was missing, so I picked that up as well, which is really, really cool. And then my DCBS box was here, so I still haven't gone through that yet, but I thought I'd record that. I wanted to talk about a couple things. I wanted to talk about comic shop, my comic shop that I go to locally. When if you know, I'm pretty loyal to Ed. I'm loyal to the businesses that don't do me wrong, but I did leave that company to go to DCBS, not just for its discounts, but because I wasn't missing any books, and Ed would, I would be missing, some of the books that he had people pull for me, especially in the back half. If it was Marvel and DC and Image, I didn't have to worry too much. But if it was anything else, I was missing stuff, and I just got frustrated and just started migrating and migrating, and then eventually everything is at DCBS minus the DC proper books like Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman stuff. The obscure stuff I get through DCBS. But the reason I'm mentioning this is because I had a question and it didn't come across. It came across as an IM, and I'm not going to say who this individual is because it seemed like he wanted to know a personal message, but I thought I will just address the comment here without saying his name. So let's see, what was the question? He said, after listening to the latest episode of Mike M's, which I really appreciate that they listened to it right away because it just came out. They said that they wanted to ask a question, but they didn't think it was appropriate on the Twitter feed, so I'm going to do it privately. And in that episode, I talked about the UPS FedEx issue with DCBS. And by the way, they switched back to UPS, and I got my package Friday, like today, which is really good and unusual. FedEx always, but in actuality, if I get it on Friday or Monday, I'm like perfectly okay with it because I'm not like one of those readers that says, "Oh, they came in, I gotta read it, gotta read it," because I read a lot of old stuff. I read books when they're 5 years old or 1 year old, whenever I'm in the mood for it. It's a library mentality. But I like to get my books in a timely manner, just because I pay for weekly shipping. But he said, was curious after your story about gold keys from Cowabunga, that seems so personalized, would you ever try Cowabunga as your main comic service supplier? I know a couple of people that have switched. John Mayo has switched from the comic book page. A couple of Nerdy Legion people have switched, and they're happy. But I have no reason to switch. Like Christine and Cameron, it's pretty much Christine. Cameron runs the in stock. They're a married couple. I have met them and I have talked to them, and I really like them both. And they have treated me with so, I don't know if it's because I'm a super customer. Like it might be that if I ordered 5 books a week, I wouldn't get as good customer service, but I ordered a fuckload of comics and I have never been treated bad by them. And they're always quick to reply to email and take care of issues, even though I've only had man, I've probably only had like 4 issues since 2006. One of them was not even their fault, but more of a shipping thing. The thing, it was like a Eagle Moss used to put like these platforms. I don't even, once I found out what they were, I never ordered them again. But the Eagle Moss figurines had these like platforms that you could put like, I think it was like 8 figures on and display them. And I bought like 2 of them, and one of them came broken, and they just replaced it. And there's a few times where my issues were not shipped or missing, and they took care of those, but four issues in fucking like over a decade, you know, it's like a long time. Is fantastic service. And by going to Cowabunga, which in actuality I talk to Eric way more than I do Christina, from DCBS. I mean, I enjoy talking to him. I'm happy that there is a competitor out there that can compete. I like knowing that, but there's no way I'm gonna switch. For one, it's a hassle because you have a month to two, and then you gotta wait for 6 months because not everything ships on time, so DCBS will still be shipping to me, and I'm on a weekly cadence, but once I stop paying weekly cadence, it fucks things up, and then it's really not fair to DCBS, in my opinion, to have to, you know, they wouldn't wanna, I stop giving them a shipping, and then because of publishers being late, they get fucked. So there's that. So I would have to have like a few months, 6 months of dissipation, maybe even more because of if I ordered the Jonah Hex omnibus, Silver Age omnibus, maybe it was Bronze Age, but it would take months. Like it doesn't come out till May, and that would take a long time. So it's not only a hassle for me to try to keep track of it all, but it's a hassle for them, not fair to them, I don't believe. And it's like you're cutting them off for no reason. Like they never did me wrong. They never did me wrong. So I am, matter of fact, I am gonna start, they're not my sponsor, but I'm gonna start promoting DCBS on this podcast. Because they offer great discounts and they have great customer service. But if you want the smaller experience, I'm also gonna steer you towards Cowabunga because they're fabulous. Eric is so good to me, and he's one of the most responsive people in customer service that you can ask for. And he cares, and they are a smaller. They don't have thousands of customers. The benefit that you may experience from, I mean, them is they have similar type discounts. The benefit is taxes. So, like, let's say I'm in Colorado, right? I have a tax from DCBS because they exceed a certain amount of product to the state of Colorado. So we have to pay taxes on it. But a small shop that may not have that much customers at that time could, they won't have to because of tax laws. You know, they might not hit that threshold for Colorado. So they wouldn't have to, you wouldn't have to pay taxes. And it was back in the day, DCBS, you didn't have to pay taxes because the internet thing, the way it worked, and now you do. Tax law changed. So they're both great services. They are not at fault when UPS or FedEx fucks up. That's on them. That's, you know, they're paying for a product. If they fuck up too much, then they should switch because they could potentially lose customers. But they have never done me wrong. Even during the transition, yeah, I'd get stuff maybe 1 or 2 days later, but you know, it didn't affect me. Everything was still packaged well, everything put together. They did start experimenting with packaging a little bit, but they come like really good condition, and we got one of those Ring doorbells, and so I rang the doorbell and told Barb I loved her. But anyway, where was I? Both great The thing I like about DCBS too is its website is more better. It's better than Cowabunga, so that's a benefit. They track everything. So one of the awesome features, since I've been there since 2006, is I'm able to go back. Let's say I'm trying to find a book, and I haven't merged it yet or anything. And Bill Bulmer on Geek Brunch says, "Hey, you want to cover that book from Zenoscope and issue one, because Bill only gets issue ones." And maybe I didn't order it, but I know that if it came from DCBS, I could look it up and see if I ordered it. Like, there's been a couple times where, like, I think with Crowded or something like that, where I didn't order number one, but I ordered two and three. So that's happened, but I don't go like having to search for it in boxes. My first process step is, do I even have it? Did I even order it? And then if I ordered it, then I can go do it, or I can choose to buy it digitally if I want to cover it with Bill. And then usually if I really like it, then I'll go to mycomicshop.com and purchase it. But yeah, both companies. I think if you spend anywhere in the 75 to more, you're gonna make a better choice by going through a mail order. And yeah, you might not be a Wednesday warrior, but so what? You get your books on Friday, and that's like going back into the past when books used to ship on Comic Book Day used to be on a Friday. At least in Albuquerque, it was. So, you shift a little bit. And if you really want to shift, you could just go digital and say, "Well, I'll read Superman in 1 year." And then once you're shifted, once you get past the 3 year, I mean 3 month marker, you wouldn't even notice. Other than if someone's poking you saying, "Have you read the latest Superman?" But who cares? You just ignore it. You'll get to it eventually. You'll enjoy your comics if you read them when you're up to it. I'm a proponent of mood reading rather than have to reading. But that was a good question. And that leads me to my next comment. Rob Liefeld posted an interesting thing on Facebook. Yeah, I follow him on Facebook. And I like usually reading what he has to say. I'm a Liefeld fan. I don't care about the feet. I think he acts childish sometimes, but I think he's very talented. I think he's got a lot of ideas. I think he gets excited about those ideas and his enthusiasm comes through. And I forgive him for the other stuff, even when he's pissed off at DC, and I love DC to death. I just ignore it. But anyway, very interesting. I sent him a question once, and he never answered it. But I was reading an article in Vantage, which was a speculator magazine in the 90s, and I took a picture of something that happened there. And this was pre-image, which was fascinating, but it sounded like Youngblood was going to Malibu. So what I really didn't understand was around the awesome when Awesome Comics came, and there's a lot of complexity in, Extreme went to Maximum and went to Awesome Comics, and then went to Arcade, and then went to back to Image. This really only addressed like the early time frame, like around the Awesome time frame. But what I really didn't know is he had a partner, so like an investor, okay? And that investor, I believe, I might be incorrectly because I'm not quoting it, worked for Malibu Comics, which would kind of make sense to that Vantage magazine because it was speculator. But he vested in Liefeld's stuff. And then he got into some financial trouble and sold his half, and then they like divvied up properties. So then there was that That happened, it sounds like around the Awesome time frame when, like Alan Moore was doing Supreme and Youngblood was Steve Scaroci, or I don't know how to pronounce it, but Glory was coming out. A couple things from Awesome Comics. They didn't last long. Prophet was like one issue. But it sounds like he got into stuff early on where he wasn't like the whole owner of stuff and his assets got divvied up. So he like owns Brigade and Bloodstrike and stuff like that. But he doesn't own Youngblood anymore. So I'm really curious of like when Youngblood went to Arcade, if he owned it or was half owner. Or when it went back to Image, because he was doing covers. He was doing cover Bs. So, like, who owned it at that time? That's what I'm really curious about. But anyway, he said, that property is sort of letting go because he really is not involved in it at all. And I don't know if he's saying that because if they do come out with something or a comic book that he's saying, I'm distancing myself from that property even though I created it. But it was a really interesting article. It's on Bleeding Cool, worth a read. And Bleeding Cool probably took it right off his Facebook page because he wrote it right on Facebook. So if you follow him and you're not an asshole to him, he won't block you and you can read stuff. But I found that fascinating. And I've always complained about Youngblood because every time it gets its little legs moving, it fails. But I'm going to continue to get it if it ever comes out. For the short period of time that it does come out, I'll definitely support it. The next thing that had a Bleeding Cool article about was a shop owner, how he handles speculators. And it was fascinating because my shop owner was doing some stuff like that. And I found that out because one of the owners, I mean, not one of the owners, but one of the workers that works there, he was telling me what was happening. And for one thing, if you're a speculator, I'll tell you flat out right now, don't go to the cashier with 10 copies of something. Maybe keep it to two and say you're ordering for it. Because then they'll be suspicious and they'll go to eBay and they'll look. The other thing you don't want to do is they get these calls from people they don't know and they say, do you have Captain Marvel number 8? And he's like, yeah, I have a copy. And then they show up and then they want to order 5 of them. So at that time, the shop owner has to think, like, what's happening? Oh, the book's hot on eBay. But what the shop owner on the Bleeding Cool article does is he won't take books that he has already allocated, but he will put books into people's stuff. And if they don't pick them up after a month, he puts them on eBay. And I think that's a legitimate thing to do. For one thing, I really don't know how those poor shop owners exist, like with lazy people. I mean, people that pick up their books once a month. Once a month is maybe not too bad, but anything beyond that is ridiculous because they've already paid for whatever you've put in your pull box and they're in the hole at that moment. They've paid their bills, they're in the hole. They paid for that book. You haven't come and picked it up. So I mean, the article brought up a lot of good points and I can see a lot of stuff happening. But what's funny about this Captain Marvel thing is this speculator came and he said, can I buy, 5 copies? And Ed told him, no, you could buy one copy. I can't pick up all 5 of them because then I would be, there's people that come in and they don't have a pull list and they pull books off the shelf and I want to have at least, a few copies so for those customers that I know come in regularly. But you can get one copy, sure. And then he proceeded to pick them all and try to find the finest looking Captain Marvel number 8, the first appearance of Star, I think that's her name, and dropped them all. This whole speculator thing is really fucked up. I mean, it's a situation they're kind of saving the industry, but I don't know. I don't know. There's a downside to it. As a shop owner, I think some, it'd be interesting to ask Eric of Cowabunga what his thoughts are on this, but if some customer comes in and tries to buy the whole shelf of books, 'cause as a shop owner and you sell them all, you've sold through, which is really what your goal is. There's just a lot of complexities that you want to address as a shop owner. Yeah, it was very fascinating article. So I already talked about the books that I picked up, and I am really excited for Tom Scioli's Grand Design, and I'm going to do a preview spotlight for it. It'll probably be my only one, even though there's a lot of great things. So the Grand Design, well, let me tell you the history of Tom Scioli with me is when I was young, I never thought much of Jack Kirby's art. I just didn't get into it. It looked weird to me. The old FFs, the old Captain Americas, Commandy, New Gods, Mr. Miracle. And then sometime in college, when I went to a comic shop, I started looking with a different eye at things. And I was like, man, these covers are just, they're so in your face. And I read a copy of OMAC. And well, actually read a copy of OMAC early in my career because it didn't have a cover. Now I never knew what it was, and I was amazed by the technology and stuff. And then when I picked it up later in life, it became one of my favorite things, and that's why I call myself OMACtivate. Because you called me on my phone, I said, "You've reached my phone, OMACtivate, baby," and I was just impressed with it. And then it was like, I got to get into Mr. Miracle and the New Gods. And then it went back to FF. And I was starting to see Kirby in a different light, like I've never seen before. It became like an obsession. Like, get everything that Kirby gets, Captain Victory, anything that I can possibly get my hands on. There's some weird mysteries from DC Comics that Kirby did, some romance comics. I was just like a freak for his stuff, and I'm still a freak for his stuff. And then Godland came out, and I saw Tom Scioli at one of the cons. I can't remember if it's Baltimore or Heroes Con. It's probably Heroes. And he was sitting next to Eric Larson, and I was watching Eric Larson, and then I started talking to Tom, and I saw that he had commissions available. And at that time, I can't remember if the commissions were $40 or $60, but he drew me two characters on each, and they were amazing. They were so Kirby-esque. Jack Kirby did a lot for the Superpowers line, the toy line that came out. And around that same time of Superpowers, Super Friends released. Right after Challenge of the Super Friends, they had Super Friends, Superpowers, or Cosmic something or another. And it focused on two characters. It focused on Firestorm and Cyborg of the Titans. And they were on Apocalypse, smashing seeds and all kinds of crap. And I became obsessed with it. So I had Tom Scioli draw me a Firestorm and Cyborg. And he knew what I was getting at when I did it. I said, "Oh, this is fucking awesome." And then I said the next commission that I got, and these were like my first commissions. I didn't even know what the fuck I was doing. I didn't know what I was gonna get. I didn't even know what I was doing. I didn't have at this time. didn't have a lot of friends that would do a lot of commissions. Like we'd meet at Heroes, but we wouldn't like go commission crazy. And this got me into commissions, and I have at least 15 commissions from Tom Scioli until he started to price me out of the business. But I love them. I have an OMAC versus the Hulk. I have a Captain America Falcon. I have a Black Bolt Medusa. I have a Karnak. I have so many different Tom Scioli commissions, and I absolutely love them. And I when he did American Barbarian, Bill bought a Page, and which I'm very jealous of Tutankhamun, I think is his name. He is like a sphinx-like god-looking thing that has tractor tank arms, I mean legs. It's amazing. And I've been following his work ever since, and I think I have everything that he's ever done. I even the direct to what do you call it, mini comics that he did, I have those as well. And I'm just a huge fan. So when he announced he's doing Fantastic Four Grand Design, and I've been to all of his panels, and I adore this guy. They call me a stalker of Matt Kent and Tom Scioli, but I adore these creators. So I'm just really excited for Fantastic Four Grand Design. He's writing it and drawing it just like he did GoBots and Transformers versus G.I. Joe, and it is different looking if you're used to just standard art styles, but for me it's just this creativity that just sort of blows my mind. It really, really blows my mind. I love it to death, and I'm very excited that announcement has happened. And I think I have time for a few questions. Oh, I wanted to follow up too with Reggie's actually gets to go home. The co-host of Cosmic Treadmill, he actually healed from I can't remember the disorder, but it's like where there's weakening in one of the veins, I think going to your heart. It's like the main one, and it's very rare, but you're usually born with it, or it could be caused by, I think they said smoking or something like that. But he had that, and he almost died, and now he's on his road to recovery, and he's actually going home. So, if you get a chance and you follow at Reggie on Twitter, or you listen to Cosmic Treadmill, make sure that you let him know that you're glad he's healing up, and you wish him the best. I think that's fantastic news. Usually we hear bad news like Derek Royal passing and stuff like that. But when somebody recovers, you want to take advantage of that. And I think that's all before I get into some questions. So I will pop up in these questions. These ones are tough. Maybe I had to do that one later. Because they're. Which superhero would have Radiohead stuck in their tape deck? I don't know. I'd say Batman. Radiohead seems to be a Batman. What superhero would have Blind Melon on their tape deck? I'm not a Blind Melon fan. But Blind Melon seems very like hippie scene like to me. So I will go with Brother Power the Geek from DC Comics. He'd be listening to Blind Melon. Which superhero would have Queen? I'm gonna say a group would have Queen. The Teen Titans. The Silver Age Teen Titans. with champions, and they, we are the champions and we will rock you, and that kind of stuff, tights together. Yeah, that seems to rock with me. Which superhero would have Duke Ellington stuck in their tape deck? Duke Ellington. I do know a lot of his music, but I don't own any Duke Ellington. I was exposed to it because I took 2 semesters in college. What I always try to do is I'd load up with like 18 credit hours, or I'd always take like 5 credit hours, like something physical. So 2 of them would be like a basketball class or a tennis class or something like that. And then 3 credit hours, I'd like to explore music. So I did a lot of music appreciation, psychology, jazz history. And I enjoy jazz history quite immensely. Duke Ellington, I would have to go with Shadow Man. He seems like the guy who would listen to Duke Ellington. Who is your top 5 comic cover artists from both the Bronze Age and modern age? The Bronze Age, God, and I am nowhere near, like, what, Nick, these are questions from Nick Wetmore of the Nerdy Legion podcast. And one thing I will say about Nick is he knows names really well. Like, they'll be talking about a trailer and he's just like popping off directors, and I don't pay attention to any of that shit. What I see is what's happening on the trailer. Like, if it isn't a big actor like Tom Cruise, then I won't know, but he just pops like names out of the top of his hat, and like if I post a cover, he's like, "Is that so and so?" And I was like, "I didn't think of that." Unless it's Kirby, but Kirby is definitely on my list as a Bronze Age. John Buscema would be on there. Trying to think. I had one on the tip of my tongue, and it just flew past me. Modern age, George Perez, for sure. Todd McFarlane, I think his art style. Steven Platt, so you can see what I'm kind of going for. Eric Larson, very Kirby-esque to me, at least in terms of layout. Tom Scioli, so there's 5. All I can think of is Kirby. Have to look up the title because the name is going past me. But I absolutely adore his art. Barry Windsor Smith. I couldn't think of that. Conan. He's also a modern age from Archer and Armstrong. I love Barry Windsor Smith. His stuff just sort of blows my mind. So that takes me to 3. I'll have to get back to you on the other ones. I know I should be popping names out like out of my hat, but it's blowing my mind that I can't think of any. But I am doing this at the top of my head, so I would just go with John Buscema, Barry Windsor Smith, and Jack Kirby. For now. Ooh, but I don't know if he's Bronze Age. He's more modern age, but I love Ron Frenz. Oh my God. I adore his art. Absolutely adore it. And he did a lot of MC2 stuff in the 90s, so he'd definitely be a modern age artist, but I love his stuff. And let's see if I could do one more. When placing a my com oh, this is from Paul Tessenier, former podcaster of Valiant Central. He won't listen to this, so he'll never hear the answer, but it's a good question. When placing your mycomicshop.com order, what is your minimum grade? For me, it's VG, but it depends on the age. If it's Bronze Age or less, I will go with VG as being the minimum. If it's as we go more towards modern age, I want fine or higher. So fine or higher, depending on price. So that's a good question. I liked it. So I'm just going to put a little marker in here to know where I left off, and I have a few more questions for the next episode. So I'll be back with some weekly reads, and I wonder if I already answered those questions. I'm getting lost in my own questions. Yeah, those were already. So my answers may have changed. But I answered some old questions. I must have scrolled up. But they're still good questions. So you probably heard three of those questions again with probably different answers. It would be interesting for me to know what I said before. Oops, there it is. But I hope you enjoyed it anyway. And if you want to shop for cheap comics, go on to dcbsservice.com. DCBS Ervis. DCB Service. That's the best way to say it. DCBService.com. They have a great website. You can order two different ways. I choose to use the website, but you can pull a pull list. Also, it has a pull list feature, so you don't have to enter it in. So if you have like 30 books that you get a month, you can all enter them in and then save them, and then the next time you just go and say resort pull list and then check your order and submit it. Or you can go the manual way with an Excel spreadsheet. Some people like to record those in Excel spreadsheets and send them off to DCBS. And they have 50% off bundles on Marvel and DC, and you can get like 40 to 50% off of number ones or 50% off trades. If they come out that month, they're 50% off. Image is usually 40%. Some of the back half are 40 to 35%. If you get to the real obscure stuff, 25%. So those are like the breakdown of comics. The shipping is really cheap, very reasonable. They're losing money on my shipping. I know it when they're like 45 to 50 pounds to, they range from 25 to 50 pounds depending on what's coming that week. And I know I'm getting a good deal on that. So yeah, check out DCB Service, and I'll be back with the reads of the week. And tomorrow, I got a Rockies game. I am turning 50. I'm an old man. I always thought when I, it's weird, when I was young, 30 was, hey, you're an adult. And then you get 30 and you're like, well, maybe that's 40-year-old. And then I'm now 50 and it's gonna be like, oh, I'm old as shit. And I think 50 is old. It is, because you're on that cusp of, you've been working forever and you're looking to retirement. You're looking to how I can exist so I can get there as early as possible. And hopefully, if things go well, I can keep my job until 55 and then look to retire. And those really 4 years, I have to figure out how to exist financially, but then, before I could start really taking advantage without penalty on pension and 401k and Social Security doesn't kick in till 66, but I probably will do the early 62. I'd rather do something at penalty than assume I'm going to live until I'm 100. I want to start pulling money. I've been working since I was 15 straight, my entire life. And I want some Social Security before it goes away. I want to take advantage of that. So, yeah. Thank you for listening. And I should pay attention more to where I am with the questions because I had it right there. And I answered so that were way, way, way above. So I screwed up. What I need to do is delete those previous lines because they throw me off. That's what I'm going to do so I don't get confused anymore. But thank you for listening to Mike M's Weekly Reads. And thank you for the questions. Again, you could send me questions at any time, and I will be glad to answer them. More than happy. They make this show very interesting for me. So keep them coming, and I will talk to you very soon. Bye-bye. And as soon as I make my way over to Audacity where I'm recording and hit stop. I was having problems with my microphone, but I'm back from Mike M's Weekly Reads. It's been a while since I recorded the first part of this episode, so I forgot what I talked about. But a couple things. There was an article on ICV2, I think it was, and then later a similar article on Newsarama about DC Comics. The weird thing is Dan DiDio didn't seem very happy with the way things are going. He seems a little more pessimistic, while Jim Lee sounds more optimistic, at least in the ICV2 article. But the Newsarama, it was a little bit of a different story because they were talking about digital. The ICV2 was sort of talking about the entire industry, where they're happy. They are happy. There's a fly. I gotta try to. Yes, got it. So these flies are coming. We have our neighbor's goats, and around August, they get really stinky, man, because of the heat, and it attracts flies. And we haven't bought a what do you call it? A fly. Those fly sticky traps yet. We need to get some outside because they always work. But that's a little more information than you need to know. Goats are sometimes stinky, but they're cute as hell and they're very cool. So it's Friday and I got a DCBS order, but I'll finish talking about my train of thought. So they're talking about sales and what things are doing. They're saying the periodicals they're very happy with. They're increasing periodical sales. That's your monthly comic. But there was a little flip of the switch there. Dan DiDio was saying that these sales don't make him too happy, or the increase in sales, because of variant covers, incentives, and all of that kind of thing. He says those are responsible, primarily what he thinks, in the increase of sales of periodicals. But it is good that they are at least doing well, so maybe we could keep seeing our periodical comics. Where things have flatlined and not increased in sales is digital. But It's very ambiguous in the article because it sounds like their sales are flatlined, and but it makes sense because they introduced a streaming service, DC Universe, that has comics on it, and they opened it up. So I think people are just saying, why do I need to read the thing now when I can talk about it whenever I feel like it? My podcast doesn't have to be about what's hot now. It could be about what I enjoy later. And people reading it, they're just consuming it at a different time, and they don't need to, absorb it. So as sales go up on the universe, I would expect sales digitally to go down. Plus, there's theft of digital sales. That's just a damn shame. But people sharing and stealing and all kinds of crap, making copies. But there's probably a lot of reasons, and I'm sure Marvel is seeing something very similar. They just haven't had an article. They said that their young adult line is increasing in sales, but they expected it. They created it because of what they were seeing in the book scan numbers, and it seems to be working. They're happy with the numbers that Raven and some of the other titles have sold. So that has been successful. They didn't really talk about their other line, the DC Black line, but I assume it's doing okay because there's more and more coming out of it, which I'm glad. I just wish they were all in the same large format. They seem to be a mixed bag on formats these days. Their trades have gotten really horribly bad sales-wise, and I don't know why that is. That's that. You think that would be sort of similar, if a story was good, that people would want to seek it out in hardcover or some kind of omnibus later on. I know I do, because I like collected editions. Maybe that's why they're starting to cancel, things here and there, which is disappointing because there's a lot of good stuff out there. So I just wanted to briefly mention that. Podcast-wise, I've been keeping caught up on, Nerdy Legion, Collected Comics Library, 11 O'Clock Comics, Comics for Fun and Profit, Comic Book Noise, Comic Book Addict, although it doesn't come out as frequently as I'd like. I've been keeping up, and to the point where I've been keeping, like, loot, I've been running out of material to listen to. So what I've done is I went back and started to listen to Mike Pindell's Comic Book Addict. I like the iTunes app and the fact that it tells me, and historically, everything I've listened to. So I'm going back to 2015 and early 2016, where I must have skipped some episodes, and catching up there. And I'm finding some really gems that he's covering. And one thing that I could say about Mike is we have similar philosophies, and we want to read all comics. And some of the obscure stuff he talks about, I'm really interested in. He talked about Blue Comet and Monarch Comics, and I really want to get a hold of these comics. They're not worth anything, but they are to me. And there'd be like a couple of dead universes I'd like to complete. And he actually got me interested in Air Raiders, which is a Marvel Star comic, and I'm trying to, seek that one out. And I didn't collect Iron Man: The Iron Age with Kurt Busiek, which kind of was like his history, which sounded fantastic. And then he turned me on to something I've never heard of, which is a reprint magazine, which is Weird Wonder Tales, I think it's called, for Marvel Comics. And he was specifically talking about the Dr. Druid issues, and they are reprints, but they're like not quite reprints because they like revamp names. Like they took Dr. Druid and changed his name to Dr. Druid, but it was something else before. That was an Amazing Fantasy or some older issues, and that was really fascinating. I really want to catch up on that, and I've sort of pre-ordered them, and I ordered one on eBay. The covers were amazing. I mean, it's worth the cost of admission, in my opinion. So I've been really happy listening to that podcast and going back. I never usually do that, but instead of trying to find something that is new, I'd rather go to some known quantity that I love and maybe dig back into some old episodes that I missed. And I was pretty happy. There are shorter episodes, so when I go for my walk with Harley, I sort of plow through like three episodes at a time. But it's been really influential on me, and there's not too many influential people as far as podcasters, because they usually talk about stuff that I already get because I get so much. But I swear, man, that Michael Pindell has a lot of material that I haven't dug into or even heard of. So I am really happy to be listening to that podcast. So The Comic Book Attic, I think there's only like four episodes this year. There's not a lot. But there's a lot in the past to go delve into, and he did appear in Mike M's Collector's Corner. So there is that. I'm excited for that. One of the other things I want to be doing lately is tracking my Kickstarters. I've been doing so many, and I'm losing track of what's come in and what's not. And it would be nice if it was linked like DCBS to say shipped, and here is the shipping number, and you'd know it was is here. But I'm going to start keeping track of a spreadsheet of Kickstarters that I buy and when they return, starting this week. And that squirrel is really eating away, and Harley's like less than a foot away from it, and it just doesn't care. Harley just looks at it. She doesn't go aggressive on it. It's weird. Matter of fact, I should be walking right now, but the last time I walked on a Friday and it was overcast like this, me and Harley got rained on, and we got to the park, which is about the midway part, and I was able to call Barb and say, "Help, can you come pick us up?" And she did. I gotta take a picture of this for Barb, because I don't know, this is really close, like they're friends or something. Oh, damn it, I missed it. But it's absolutely fascinating, these two. I think they formed a friendship, Harley and the squirrel. And she is a female, because I could see all her nipples. But they seem to get along quite a bit, and usually, when she would get really upset, the squirrel, when they first encountered each other, the squirrel's tail would just go ch-ch, and it'd make all kinds of weird noises. But now the squirrel's tail doesn't even feel threatened, and they just hang out, and I think they communicate through eyes and stuff. Bless Harley's soul, man. She's a great dog. It's amazing how much peace of mind that she gives me. But there was one other topic I wanted to talk about, and I totally forgot. So I think I'm going to just jump right in to books that I've read, and we'll go from there. And I haven't read a hell of a lot, because I've been watching a lot more movies, but I've been in a weird phase. So this is for the week of July 7th through July 14th. There were a total of 18 comics and one movie. We'll start with the comics. We had six Xenoscope, I should say. I put an O in there when I talk about them, but Xenoscope, which I'm on a kick right now. That's the company that I want to read. Like there's things that I'm going to read for Geek Brunch and DC and all kinds of other podcasts, but what I really want to read is the Xenoscope stuff. I'm totally in that mode, and it pisses me off when people like judge a book by its cover, and Xenoscope is always that. people judge it because of what's on the cover. But man, the continuity is so rich and the stories are just so awesome and the art is sometimes awesome, but average to better depending on the title. But I'm always stories driven anyway, so I am engrossed with this company right now. And matter of fact, my next mycomicshop.com purchase is going to include some Zenoscopes I missed. I really, my end goal would be to have every Zenoscope book. And the other thing that it's increased is I know I'm supposed to be making cutbacks, but I want all of the comics that come from Zenoscope. So I will be getting all of them, except for those weird ones that are like Shark Week things and things like that. But I do like the conspiracy things and things that are embedded in the Zenoscope universe. So I will be partaking in purchasing them. And I look forward to spending more time with the company. As like I just read some in the middle of the night, I read some Zenoscope and Sella. There's really good Sella issues. One of the covers was like Sella No More. You know how Spider-Man throws his costume in there? Well, Sella's in jail right now, chained heat. But she was trying to go get her daughter, and her daughter is with Venus, and Venus has sort of brainwashed her daughter, and she was treating Sella bad, and she tried to rescue her at school, and things blew up, and it wasn't Sella's fault, but she got arrested for the damage to the school and possible, what do they call it, where potential murders of children. So she's in jail right now, and she's dealing with that. And then there's an attorney that's trying to get her out because she knows she's innocent, and Sella wants no part of it. She's just depressed as hell and wants to be in prison. So we'll see where that goes. But that's in the future. We'll talk more about that. But so we had Zenoscope 6, Marvel 2, 7 DC, 1 Aftershock, 1 Action Lab, and 1 Absolute Comics, also known as Red Giant. I think if you looked in the previews, they're under Red Giant. But if you look at the corner indices of like their logo, it's Absolute Comics, which I really like. They just don't come out that frequently, and I know their distribution thing's fucked up because like I barely got issue 2 of White Widow, and I've seen it at like C2E2 like way early before it. So I think things are off as far as how people are getting these, and they're not like Kickstarted, so I don't know how they're getting these things, maybe directly. The movie I watched was a 5 out of 5, and it was amazing. Crawl. It was a movie about a hurricane hitting Florida and an alligator situation. I loved it. But I expected to like it because of the director. The director that did Spider-Man, what's his name? An Evil Dead. Like it's the name is like Nick Wetmore is probably slapping me in the face because he like knows names and I don't. But I remember things. It's weird how some people remember certain things. Like if a film is amazing, I remember the story, but I can't tell you all the actors or or the director, the people that created the masterful work, but I can't tell you the story. Other people can remember all that stuff. I'm not one of them. So the comic books, the number 4, there was a good week. We had 4 out of 5s and 5 out of 5s, and the 4 out of 5 started. There were no 3 out of 5s, which is, I like it. 4 out of 5s means I really liked it. 5 out of 5 means I loved it. So Dark Red number 2. The woman is trying to convince our main vampire, who was using that one girl that has that blood disorder, to join the cause. He meets this high-level vampire he's introduced to, and that vampire wants to recruit him, but he kills that vampire. It's a little shift of the storytelling, and I liked issue 1 more, but I'm still interested and intrigued on where this is going. I then read True Believers Venom Sinner Takes All. I've never read this number three. It's got like a she Venom on the cover, which has really gone up in price, and that's why I took advantage of this dollar issue. The issue where a symbiote was put on Anne, and she's a character that is in Venom. And if you've been listening to these, you know that I've adopted Venom as my character of the year. So I've read a lot of Venom this year. Eddie is being attacked by two goons when the bride of Venom kills the two men. She is overcome with grief and wants to get back to her apartment when two federal agents are waiting for her. When they go there, there is a woman pretending to be her sister who is also waiting. Meanwhile, the Sin Eater is killing a lot of people, and Venom attacks him but finds out it was a dummy. So overall, this is the first issue that I read in it. I really wanted to read it for the She Venom, but I enjoyed the hell out of it, and I want this whole series. So I'm probably gonna be dropping more money on the issues, and that one issue is expensive, like $30 or something. But we'll see what happens. We then have Grimm Fairy Tales, Myths and Legends, number 17 and 18. These are some that I put on my to buy because I only had 17 and 18, but it was Hansel and Gretel. Oh, Harley, don't go up there. I didn't. Let me move my comics first. I haven't opened up my package yet, which is really weird because usually that's what I want to open up. But I wanted to record before Barb got home, so she decides to go on the couch. And that's where I had my books. I've been thinking of a Patreon, not to necessarily get money for myself because I don't want it, but it's expensive, like for Derek to do this, and I do donate money to him a lot, but he hosts all this crap, and if I could get a few dollars every so often and just send it over to him on PayPal, I would help him. But I don't know where I'm gonna do with that. 'Cause I would do a lot of video. But let me check to see how much time I have to finish recording this. I probably have about half hour, so I'm gonna step on it 'cause I wander a lot. So Grimm Fairy Tales was the Hansel and Gretel who are ghost hunters in the current time, and their next hunt is for a particular witch. And this is like in modern times. This isn't like so Grimm Fairy Tales takes a lot of like the fairy tales, if you will, and puts them in modern times and modern situations, and that's what's happening here. I want to finish this, so I put it on my cart. This must be a time when I was cutting back too, and I didn't finish a lot of series. Savage Avengers, number 3. Kalan Gath is using Wolverine's blood to raise the Morrow God with the blood of warriors. Brother Voodoo tries to rescue him along with Elektra and Punisher, who is looking for the bodies of his family. Gath manages to stab Conan, but the Venom symbiote that was freed in the previous issue heals him, and that I don't think that's the Venom we know. I think it's just another one that's in the Lost Land that heals him. Now the Morrow God is released, and our heroes are the only thing that can save the world. I'm really enjoying this. So the Venom really isn't the Venom when you see the Venom on the cover. It's a symbiote. And the way they introduced Punisher into the story, along with Elektra, it worked really well. I enjoyed it. The next one is a slice of life book, Love and Lost. It's an anthology of romance tales by the author. It's not really an anthology. It's because an anthology would probably indicate a different artist and a different writer for each story. But this is a bunch of short stories by the same writer artist, and it's from Action Lab. And the one that we're going to talk about this more in detail on Geek Brunch because it was one of Bill's choices to cover, and I read it a long time ago. But the one story that stood out to me was he was on a date with a feminist, Oh, this is a different story. I'm a bozo. This is an anthology story. I'm getting it confused with another anthology. This one I bought at Baltimore Comic Con, and I gave credit to Action Lab, and it should be, man, I can't remember what the hell they're called. I wonder if they're in my database. Probably not. I think it's like Love Lost. Dang it. It's not. Sometimes I don't put titles in because I'm lazy. I can't think of what the name of it is. But this anthology was really good. This was, I don't know, it's probably about a 120-page anthology. But the one that I really liked was the guy goes on a date with a feminist a vegan eater. Fascinating because I went to a vegan Ross restaurant, but he's meeting this girl and she's constantly on social media, like she's a real big feminist and supporting her, and he follows her on social media, so he's aware of the situation, but he's kind of distracted with her just paying attention to the phone while they're talking and stuff. He can't really get to know her. So he said, I'm gonna step away for a bit. He's shocked to find out she's a feminine, not a vegan eater, and they go to a raw vegan and they're looking at the menu and she knows what she wants and he goes, I can't make up my mind. That's kind of like when I looked at a vegan raw restaurant. I freaked out and I picked something really shitty. It tasted like dirt. It was like a hamburger thing and it made out of bean. I don't know what the hell it was. It was awful. But I felt out of my element for sure. The one thing that I did like is I drank some kind of natural I don't know, it was like a slush of some sort. And that I did like, you know, if I ever went there again with Keith Knutson and people that like to eat vegan, I would just go buy myself three drinks and just wait until I could eat something later. So, the interesting thing is he goes across the street and he doesn't tell her where she's going, and she's so obsessed with her phone that he texts her and says, "Look what I'm eating." And then she answers and she, you went across the street to that burger joint? And he goes, you're damn right I did. I kind of liked it. I liked that issue. There was a lot of good stories in that too. It bothers me that I don't know the publisher because they had a big presence at Heroes Con and I enjoyed this a lot. But oh, maybe it is Love and Lost. Maybe it is in my database. Let me check. No. Oh man, I wanna know what there are. Let me see if I can Google it. 'Cause I have bought a couple comics from them. Love and Lost comic book. It's on Comixology. Let me see if that one. Yeah, that's it. So it is available on Comixology. A Wave Blue World. Instead of a Brave New World, it's a Wave Blue World. So I'll update my notes. A Wave New World. So, Dragon's Blood number two is Zenoscope. He's dealing with the aftermath of killing the dragon and is challenged by another female warrior. That's a Zenoscope book, really well drawn, with dragons and stuff. I'm really digging it. Grim Fairy Tales presents Musami, number one, a cross between Katana and Shazam as she's hunting down the eight deadly sins. Not the seven, the eight. We then have from Absolute Comics, White Widow number two. She finds out why her parents injected her as a kid. She had a rare disease and she was going to die from it. And it helped her, and it didn't manifest. The disease didn't start manifesting itself again until she was playing volleyball, and now she has all these powers, and there's an organization that's out to kill her. Really good comic book, really good art. Solid. 4 out of 5, Hell Child, Blood Money, 2 through 3. The pimp turns out to be superpowered and fights Hellchild to a standstill. And Hellchild was hired to protect that one kid that got involved in a situation where they killed 2 prostitutes accidentally. But his friends did that, and he had to call his father to get it cleaned up. And his father's like, "What the fuck, kid?" You know. And he actually hires Hellchild to protect his kid, and Hellchild is tracking this craziness back to a sex trafficking ring, so we'll see where that goes. I do have 4, I think, or it's on its way. It might be in that box that just came in. And then we got Deceased 1 and 2. I read these to record an episode with Kyle on DC Spotlight. I really hope you guys are checking that out. We're really having a good time talking about DC Comics, and we are using the DC Universe app to involve the audience so they get to vote on polls on what we're covering. And we are involving things to watch. So keep an eye out on that and follow us on Twitter, and you'll be able to vote on the polls. So Deceased number 1 and 2, the disease starts with the anti-life equation and an apocalypse, and Cyborg spreads it to Earth, where technology is turning people into zombies, like cell phones and all that kind of crap. Nightwing infects Batman, and he is able to prolong his humanity by using Mr. Freeze's technology. At the end, it looks like he is a zombie and that Alfred shoots him. Aquaman also appears infected while Superman is gathering his family and Damian to deal with the situation. So right out of the gate, it looks like Batman, Nightwing, and Aquaman are infected, and it's affecting a lot of people, and Superman's trying to get a team together to deal with the situation. Manhunter 11 through 15, 5 out of 5. So the 5 out of 5s were DC Comics, Deceased 1 and 2, Manhunter 11 through 15. The Dumas is revealed to be Mark Shaw, and it was brainwashed by the government. It starred Chase from the DEO, which is very appropriate for the current series event Leviathan, because Chase does appear in there, and so does Manhunter, and it involves the DEO. And her and Manhunter are able to capture Mark and try to put him up with Dylan in some kind of witness protection program. The government thinks he's dead. Then they get an issue that shows up where Kate got her talons from Azrael, costume from Darkstar, and staff from Mark Shaw's Manhunter, which you obviously know. During this arc, Kate is captured by Mark to be killed, but is saved by OMAC. Chase and Dylan caused the whole OMAC activation. So it actually tied into the OMAC project, which is where Batman had the satellite Big Brother, and it was turning humans into OMAC, and it turned out to be a huge fucking disaster where Batman really fucked up. We then get into the week of 7/15 through 7/21. We had a total of 3 movies. The 3 out of 5 movie was Stitched, only 17 minutes long. It was a Garth Ennis directed and written movie where the artist Mike Wolfer actually consulted on the movie. It was sort of very generic and cheap on the cheap end, but Avatar published it, and it was all right. I mean, I liked it. I just didn't like how expensive the DVD was for 17 minutes, and I didn't realize it was only 17 minutes, or I might have thought not to get it. I thought, because Stitch was a comic book that I really enjoyed that came from Avatar, so I wanted to see the movie, good or bad. But I am glad that I bought it. I am glad I own it. I just wished it was a longer and betrayed more of the comic. We then get to the 4 out of 5. I re-watched for the first time in since I was a teenager, Zorro the Gay Blade, and with George, is his name George Harrison? I know it's George Hamilton, who also played a vampire in Love. I can't Love Bites or something like that. I can't remember the movie. I bought that too. But Zorro the Gay Blade is it uses the plot of Zorro and turns it into sort of a comedy where there's like two Corsican, well, they're not Corsican brothers, because Corsican brothers, if one feels pain, the other one feels pain. But they're two twins. One comes and finds this city, California area to be ravaged by rich people and they're treating the poor. So he goes out as Zorro and he's left the Zorro costume because his father was killed. And he found out that, he was Zorro, so he continued the legacy. But on his first bout, he did pretty badass, but he got hurt. He hurt himself really bad. Matter of fact, the main character went had to prove that he wasn't injured and was like really making him run and dance, and he was in incredible pain because he went out as Zorro and he suspected that he was Zorro. But then his gay brother came and he's a twin and he became Zorro, and then later on they both became Zorro. It was really funny, really good, really fun. And my 5 out of 5 movie came out from left field. It was Stuber. I love this movie. It brought back like the buddy cop movie, even though one of the guys isn't a cop, but I just need it. It felt right. It was funny. It was continuous action. I enjoyed the hell out of it. And even though I saw the previews, there was so much more to enjoy. And it wasn't one of those movies where you're like, wow, all the good stuff was in the previews. No, this whole movie was just really good. I really, really enjoyed it. And then we get into the comics. There are 21 comics, one Waxwork worth, two IDW, two Eternity comics, 12 DC comics, and four Dark Horse comics. We'll start at the bottom with 4 out of 5s. There were no 3 out of 5s. So we jumped into Transformers, which I'm really enjoying, which is really odd, because I've never enjoyed Transformers, but I'm enjoying this new incarnation. The Death of Brainstorm is the mystery behind this book. Windscream and the others are in the investigation while Rumble continues this tutelage with Bumblebee. Wheeljack takes Rumble under his wing for a while to train him, and Megatron has an assassination attempt on him while he is giving a controversial speech. And Optimus Prime, who's not called Optimus Prime at this time, is supposed to be protecting him. Really good story. I'm enjoying the heck out of it. We then get into DC Comics Superman 8 through 11, the story of John in space with Jor-El and him losing his mind. He then gets sucked into a, you know, so John, who's with that crazy ass Jor-El, gets sucked into a black hole and is caught by Ultraman and Superwoman of the crime syndicate. And Jor-El manages to save him from Ultra Woman as she's about to kill him. He escaped from Ultraman, which would like keep him imprisoned, come whine to him every so often, leave, and then come back and repeat. And then when he escaped, Ultra Woman saw him and was going to kill him. Superwoman. So then they head to Earth, Jor-El and John, where Rogel Czar, the main villain, attacks. Superman and John try to stop an intergalactic war, which looks to be started by Jor-El at this time in the book. And things are looking up until Rogel Czar and Zod attack, and it looks like they're in big trouble until Supergirl and Krypto show up as backup. We have from Eternity Comics Archangels number 1 and 2. I might own like four Eternity Comics in my whole collection, and these are two of them I picked up in one of those cheap bins. Homeless main man sounds like Lobo. A homeless man is a hero that looks to be an angel of some sort and is fighting off demons. The main villain is a demon who wants souls. He has the demons kill 4 teenagers, but one of those teenagers survives. The Archangel is out to protect the last survivor while the demons are going after him. It's good 90s art. And it was a compelling story, so I'm looking to complete that. We have Poser number 4. I really enjoyed what Waxwork has put out. In this crazy twist, the Poser killer turned out to be the main character's father that owned the record store. Pretty fucking insane. I didn't see that coming. After he is killed, she takes up the Poser role and tries to do some crazy killing, but is killed almost immediately. So then we get into Conan 12 through 15. This is really about the Bone Woman. There's this older woman that recruited this. She's like a witch, and she recruited this woman, and they were going after a mystic. It might be Tath or Toth, or I can't remember what the villain is. He might be the same villain that's in Savage Avengers, interesting enough, but there's a weird scene in there where Conan actually betrays that woman, even though they're at each other's throats almost entirely. But you wouldn't think that he would do it, and he did. But it's been a really interesting Conan. I haven't read these before. They're the Dark Horse Conans, and I'm reading it in a Epic Collection, which is Conan Chronicles Volume 1, and I'm almost complete with it. And we'll see where that goes. I picked up on Conan way later, like when Tim Truman and Brian Wood came on, but this is the Kurt Busiek stuff, so it's really cool. We got Dead Man number 1 through 4. We covered this in grave detail on DC Spotlight, but what makes this fascinating is I've spent a lot of time reading Strange Adventures and The Brave and the Bold starring Dead Man, and this kind of like leads right off of that. And at this time, he's redeemed himself because he found his killer with the hook, and it turned out to be the sensei in the League of Assassins, like a random killing. Well, this kind of retcons things because the random killing isn't really a random killing. There's this guy Jonah, who was possessed. He had dead man powers from R Ramakrishna, and Rama gave him the same kind of goal in the past, and he's trying to escape that. He's very bitter about it because Rama would never give him peace. And so he wants to destroy Nada Parbat. And he took over the sensei's body and tried an assassination on Dead Man because he went back to the circus and possessed his brother's body, Cleveland Brand. Because he was still alive, this whole situation turned into a nightmare because he kind of relived his death as a woman assassin. I forget what her name is. Actually, shot. Well, her name was Lotus. Lotus shot Dead Man as he was in his brother's body performing at the circus. So his innocent brother is dead now, and there. So he went after Lotus, and there's a small person who's part of the circus, and that person ended up shooting Loomis, and then it led to a whole battle in Nada Parbat, them capturing Dead Man like 2, 3 times and torturing him until one arrogant guard decides to pick on him and puts his body, like his arm, in the sphere where he's contained. In which Dead Man's able to take his body at that time and escape. And it turns out to be a really good story. And when this ends, you don't know what the status quo is because Rama's sort of gone. She put herself into Jonah, and they had like this blow. He blew up. So we'll see what happens. This was a really interesting story. And that's sort of summarizing it. We then get into the DC 5 out of 5s, Year of the Villain number 1. This is a tale which is making Lex one of the most wanted men in the United States. Luthor is also behind all of the chaos by the villains across the country as he's recruiting every single villain to cause chaos, hence the Year of the Villain. There's a story showing the rise of Perpetua and how Lex released her and how she's sort of supporting Lex and her goals. And finally, there's a Batgirl is confronted by Leviathan, and they want to recruit her as Oracle in rebuilding the world. That's what Leviathan's doing, is recruiting. And then we got Superman up in the sky. It's a comic book version of the Walmart books. That's another thing that in that interview is they talked about the success of the Walmart book, sort of expanding the audience. At least they think it is, through a sales perspective. But it could be a bunch of comic people going to Walmart and getting it, and they're really not growing their fan base. But they're extending them in September to direct market, and I'm happy about that. That way, I don't have to go to Walmart and get my books anymore. I could just pre-order it like and buy them that way. So this is Superman up in the sky. 5 out of 5. Yes, Tom King wrote it. I really enjoyed it. I feel like he's really got a handle on the character, and he's not like trying to. A lot of times, I don't like Tom King, because he writes like he's trying too damn hard and trying to win an Academy Award, and it drives me crazy. And it works for a lot of people, but not for me. My brain just, it's my fault, not all the people. He's winning Eisners, and it's just, I just don't like it. But this one I really did enjoy. I really thought it was fascinating. A family with a foster girl is slaughtered, and there's only one survivor. And the murderer came on a Zeta beam, so Batman believes that only Superman can solve this mystery. Superman risks his life and hooks up to a machine and has a lot of flashbacks that could drive him mad. But he then gets a hint of where Alice could be, the girl that's missing that was captured by the Zeta beam. And her other sister did perish in the hospital, which kind of convinced Superman he needed to solve this crime, even though he thought his time could be spent better on Earth. Justice League Dark number 12. The chaos magic is utilized by Wonder Woman and Zatanna and the rest of the Justice League Dark to take down Fate and his plan to get rid of the world of magic. Some wonderful flashback scenes with Wonder Woman and Batman on the formation of Justice League Dark. There's a fantastic way to wrap this. This is the fantastic way to wrap up this arc. We then have the 5 out of 5. This one I really, really enjoyed, leading into DC Spotlight, where we cover Event Leviathan, but it was Superman's Leviathan Rising, which Clark lets himself get kidnapped by an organization in his apartment, and they don't know he's Superman, but they're trying to lead Superman there, and they know Clark is one of the impulses. Little did he know that Talia al Ghul was part of this, and she had kryptonite. So when Clark let himself get captured, she put kryptonite around his neck, which made it like a really bad situation for Clark. Lois goes to get help from Batman because he's missing, and Wonder Woman. Jimmy Olsen is on a book tour in Gorilla City, and actually got married, but they're gonna annul the wedding. It was a really good. I really enjoyed the Jimmy Olsen story, and it involved that cat that's a Red Lantern, which was amazing. Very vibe, very Silver Age vibe in contemporary time, with how the Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen was written, and I think that's why it works so well for me. And finally, there was a story on Supergirl coming back home to find her home destroyed and her stepmom kidnapped. So 5 out of 5. Both those first two stories, though, I loved. The third story was good, but it wasn't great. But I still had to give it a 5 out of 5, especially for that Clark letting himself get kidnapped story and the Jimmy Olsen story. Really enjoyed it. So, that wraps up this episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. I also want to start talking about music that influenced me. And the first one I want to talk about is a band, but the album was Play Deep by The Outfield, and it happened in my high school years, and I love this album so much. And I love the band. Everything on that album was just gold. And it caused me to buy every you think they were one-hit wonders, but they did have a couple more hits after the three hits that were inside of Play Deep. On their following albums, they had a couple more, but they had like eight albums, and I have them all. And I will say that there is not one that I don't cherish. I love The Outfield. So it's a band that was very influential to me, and it kind of defines me as a teenager. I don't know, the music I just felt, I just loved it. So if you need to get a hold of me, you can reach me, or have comments on the episode or questions for future episodes. You can reach me at mike@comicbooknoise.com. That's my email address. You can reach me at Twitter at Mike Myers Brunch. You can reach me on the Facebook if you go to Geek Brunch Podcast and click the like button there. Or you can go to the website, geekbrunchpodcast.com, and follow the episodes there. And you can comment on the episodes there on Facebook, on Twitter, and that's pretty much it. But there's lots of ways to get a hold of me. I want to thank you for listening to me and putting up with my rambling. And we'll catch you next time, next week, as I talk about more comics and more movies and maybe a little music. So take it easy. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Bye-bye.